Yes, hello and welcome to Tech Plus, our weekly roundup of the biggest tech stories. As always, nice to be with you. My name's Ion and I'm joined by Kane. Kane, how was your week? Hello.
My week was good. How was your week?
Lekker. Hot. And short, a bit of a break on Thursday. And then we've got some people taking a long weekend now, and then next weekend's also a long weekend because it's Easter.
Did you take a break on Thursday?
Just a little bit. You never really switch off when you have your own business, as you know.
No.
But just a little bit of a break in the routine,
extended
I would say.
Lunchtime.
Yeah. I like that. That's extended lunchtime. I think that's a nice one. Are you going away for Easter or are you doing a staycation?
Staycation, eh?
Same.
Yeah, I'm going to exercise my right to do nothing.
So you're taking a break over Easter?
I think, to the best of my ability, we're going to try and
do they know it. What Easter is over there, overseas?
They have some faint idea, you know. They know it has something to do with working a little less. But
oh, okay, mostly, and a rabbit.
That's working less than a rabbit. Well defined. Sure, but I like Easter. I mean, I've actually have some great memories of Easter running around finding, you know, chocolate eggs.
Yes.
And, you know, this one time my dad got me an Easter egg. And it wasn't like any Easter egg I'd ever had. It was the size, like it was a big Easter egg. So it wasn't like your marshmallow egg, guys. Mm. It was like a big Easter egg and it was orange. And inside of it, it had like almond flakes and like something.
Oh, wow.
And also this other thing that was like, you know, the inside of a crunchy?
Oh, yeah.
Like, kind of like that as well.
Okay, wow.
This was the best Easter egg I've ever had in my life. I have never to this day found it again. And any time I see an Easter egg covered in orange wrapping paper, I get so excited because I'm like, I found it. This is the best Easter egg in the world.
So you just had it that one time?
No, I just get
And he never said where
chocolate.
He got it or anything. Did
no.
he not bring it from
it was
overseas?
So good because how often do you get an Easter egg that's crunchy?
No.
You know,
mine's almost hollow, man.
Yeah, hollow
or marshmallow. Yeah.
Just straight milk. And I'm not a big, like, straight... Like, if you give me a piece of chocolate and it's just straight chocolate, there's no, like, texture or anything in the middle of there, I don't like it. But I have friends that absolutely, like, the more milky, the better, you know, the smoother.
Yes, like lint, man. Lint's the best.
Do you like lint, the balls?
All the lint.
Any lint.
All the forms and... All forms of lint.
I'm passionate about this lint.
Yes. It's just delicious. I mean, you don't get any other chocolates to just melt in your mouth.
And
like
second
that.
Best to that, what would you pick? Oof. Do you remember Chocolate Log?
Yes. Do you still? Yeah, you still get that.
No, gone.
You don't?
Fallen
also
hero.
Also a bit of a, like a marshmallowy, no, not, like a
yeah, that was it.
White thingy
it was
inside.
So nice,
yeah.
It was my favorite chocolate.
It feels like I saw one the other day or I had one
there
the other day.
There is a new one
no.
that's like new on the scene trying to, you know.
That is gone.
Go in those footsteps, but that was a nice chocolate.
It was, yeah.
Oldie but a goldie.
Yeah, you get some good chocolates that just disappeared, you know. It's always our favorites that disappear. I don't understand why they stopped making them. They're supposed to be popular.
I know. I've even got a piece of news this week that's just for you.
Yes.
It's about laptops.
Okay.
Because I know your laptop's starting to... If laptops had grey hairs, yours would have at least one by now.
You should see all my grey hair popping out nowadays.
From the
it's
laptop.
Scary. It is. Yeah, I think it's contributing. Jeez. It's crazy. I was thinking the other day, because I just... Everywhere, I just have grey hairs popping up. And I was thinking the other day... Jeez, I can't keep pulling them out because later on I'm going to have like bald spots because they're getting more and more, you know? This is like a mid-30s problem for me. You're heading that way. Yeah.
I watched a video on TikTok by a guy who stopped vaping and taking cigarettes and stuff, and he replaced it with this like a nicotine patch that you put inside your mouth, like above your teeth almost in the front of your gum. And, you know, he was kind of advocating this, and like 6-7 weeks later, the right-hand side of his beard started going gray.
What?
And it was because if you have too much nicotine, around your face, you can get some discoloration. So I guess just his right hand side of his beard was going gray. I've never seen that before. And he said his doctor said it might be a nicotine patch. So
Wow.
If you didn't know, you don't know what you don't know until you know, eh?
Yeah, you.
So embrace it, way. You know. Go, you might suit you. You never know.
I don't think so.
Silver,
right.
Should I say?
I don't think so.
So in terms of laptops, we're taking a look at two categories of laptops here, and it's always good to know what's the lay of the land every year for laptops. People are going to school, they need a laptop. People are working, they need a laptop. People are, you know, just trying to start a new hobby, they need a laptop. Maybe that's just for entertainment, you know, to keep on the bus or on the plane or as you travel. Everybody needs a laptop for one thing or another. And laptops are so expensive these days. I mean, you could spend 100,000 rand on a laptop, 50,000, 25,000, even 5,000, 2,000. You can spend all these different amounts on a laptop, but how do you know what you need? So in this little snippet, what happened was my broadband actually put together a list of, you know, some of the best laptops under 8,000 Rand. And we're going to talk about it today and tell you where you can find some of these. I think first and foremost, Kloppers, they're great. You know, if you need something, they can probably find it there. So for anyone that hears any of these names that is interested, go check in there and see if you can see it. So we have the Lenovo IdeaPad. So the IdeaPad series is actually a very popular Lenovo series, and they even had another version before which is called the ThinkPad, and it actually had like a little red dot on the keyboard that operated as a secondary mouse. Very, very interesting.
Wow.
Little laptop.
That's
used
cool.
By a lot of DJs and things like that. But this little Lenovo IdeaPad 1 is about 6,500 Rand from Evitech, and it has Ryzen processors, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 gig NVMe SSD, basically enough, and it's 15-inch, so it has enough for you to do basically any kind of web browsing, Netflix watching, word processing, maybe even a little bit of basic gaming, especially browser-based stuff, design-based stuff, you should be fine with. It has a graphics card in it as well. Very unlike, you know, you don't really find these things at that kind of price range. So what you're looking for here is kind of just above 8 gigs of RAM or 8 gigs and above 256 gig hard drive. Then you've got the Asus X15, that's an i3. So instead of Ryzen, you have Intel Core i3, 8 gigs of RAM, 256 hard drive. Very similar prices. The only difference is instead of a Ryzen processor, you're getting an i3 or an i5 Intel processor. In this case, it's an i3, and that's 7,000 Rand. You get the Asus X54 3AU, that's 7,700 Rand, also i3, half the RAM and double and almost quadruple the hard drive space. So this one is favoring someone who doesn't need the processing power but does need extra hard drive space. And then you have a few others. You've got the Lenovo IdeaPad 3, which is a newer version of the first one. The Asus X15 MA, which is a even more advanced version of the first one that we mentioned. And then you've got the HP 15S notebook at 8,000 Rand, also very similar specs. So pretty good pricing, you know.
Yeah, and you know what? You just mentioned Kloppers. They've got their 57th birthday happening right now.
Oh, wow.
And they've got some really good offers until the 13th of April on a variety of appliances, electronics, TV, audio, and so much more. So you might want to pop in at 54 Main Road here in Eisner and go and check out those specials.
I'm also
or wherever your Kloppers is, because we've got Kloppers all over South Africa.
Yeah, we even featured that article the other day that showed that Kloppers had one of the cheapest PlayStation 5s in South Africa.
Wow.
We also saw that they have some really good Black Friday deals. I think, if anywhere, Kloppers is one of those places where I think you can actually get a very close to take a lot, ideal, but local availability. Walk into the shop, get it, leave. But I think what also Kloppers has a really good reputation for is actually direct channels with the distributors. So if there is a device that you want that they don't have, naturally they can get it for you, and probably at a pretty good price. I bought my laptop from them, my TV from them.
Good.
I've never been disappointed by their service.
Absolutely.
Speaking of service, if you're a gamer, these 8,000 Rand laptops aren't going to work for you.
Right? Oh, no.
You need something with a little bit more beef, and that beef's name is an RTX 40 series GPU. And for gamers, you'll know what it means. For non-gamers, it's the graphics card, and you know, if you really don't know about graphics cards, the latest version of graphics cards, the latest generation of graphics cards. The prequel to this was the RTX 30 series, and then before that, the RTX 20 series, and before that, the GTX 10 series. So we're talking about the latest series of GPUs. You need the RTX 40 series, and these have some really cool features. The use of AI is what you're going to see a lot in some of these newer laptops and newer hard and newer gaming laptops. So, you know, 40 series GPUs have the newest version of AI improvement to your ability to generate frames, which is essentially how smooth your gaming experience is. That being said, let's take a look at some of the best priced RTX 40 series laptops in South Africa at the moment. The Lenovo IdeaPad Gaming 3. So before we looked at the IdeaPad 1 and the IdeaPad 3, this is the IdeaPad Gaming 3. This comes with your 1080p screen. So you've got a high resolution screen, quick refresh rate, 120 hertz refresh rate, 512 gigabyte super fast NVMe, and an RTX 4050 6GB. This is going to do all your entry level gaming really, really well. It's got a really good screen for it. It's called the Lenovo IdeaPad Gaming 3, and it's about 17,000 rand from Evitech. You got the Woot Book Nova 4060, which is from Wootware. This is a 2K resolution display, so you've got double the display. You've even got a better graphics card here, the RTX 4060. You've got a better CPU here, the i7-13620, but you've got less of a hard drive. You've got 256 gigs, and you've got double the RAM of some of our 8,000 Rand ones, and that's about 16 gigs of RAM. That's about 22,000 Rand. So you got to ask yourself, is it worth, if you're going to get the one before, is it worth spending like that 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 Rand more to get a better laptop? If you're doing entry-level stuff, your 1080p screen is going to do fine with most entry-level hardware. That's one way that you can know for sure if you're going to have a good time. Just look at the resolution of the screen. If it's 1080p, you can afford to have some lower-end specs, which means if it's 1080p, you can afford to spend less. If it's 2K resolution, it's now going to be more challenging. It's actually double the rendering requirement. It's twice the screen size, so it needs twice the performance. So already, if you have an entry-level PC, same specs between one PC and the other PC, but one is 1080p and the other one's 2K resolution, and your priority is to get the best performance, you're going to get far more performance out of the 1080p one than you're going to get out of the 2K one. So here we see the start of the 2K laptop prices is where you start hitting that 20K ceiling. And then when you're going even more performance for that 2K resolution screen, that's where you're hitting closer to 30,000 Rand a laptop. That's the Woot Book Ultra Y16. It's got a 4070 in it, 512 gigs of hard drive space. And then if you're really crazy and you want to get the absolute best performance, what you can do is you can do something crazy. You can take a 1080p screen and you can strap some of the absolute best hardware to it. And that's what the Woot Book Ultra Y16 is. It has a i9, which is just like super powerful. The best, one of the best graphics cards, 4080, 512 gig of RAM. I mean, hard drive space and 16 gigs of RAM, but it's got a 1080p screen on it. So this is going to be like your super ultra. This is like an esports guy kind of laptop, you know.
Oh, yeah,
but at 44,000 Rand.
Yo.
So the argument I was trying to make is, if you are someone who wants to get into gaming and you're not going to be like trying to thread the needle in terms of the absolute best performance that you can get, you're talking about the difference between a 17,000 Rand laptop and a 44,000 Rand laptop just to get, you know, like a better gaming experience. So you, there is an entry level place for you to start. And that's kind of the laptop deals in South Africa at the moment. If you see any of these laptops around and you're considering getting a gaming laptop and you hear any of those terms, you're probably on the right track. And let us know if you do end up getting one and which one you do end up getting.
You know, the nice thing also about laptops is you don't need a like a external form of battery to keep it going during load shedding.
Yeah.
It can, most new laptops can last 2 to 4 hours on battery, maybe longer.
It's exactly what you need, you know.
That's very nice.
It works for South African compared to a desktop.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Exactly, because a desktop, you can't just keep that going on a you know, one of those old UPSs. You need a inverter nowadays.
So who's your mobile phone provider?
The yellow one.
The yellow one.
Yes.
Yeah, Vodacom.
Who's yours?
Mine is Telkom, and here we're talking about Vodacom. So apparently Vodacom had a big network outage the other day.
Obviously, we didn't notice because we have a better network at MTN. more sophisticated.
You know what's really funny about what you say is looking at this article on My Broadband about Vodacom's embarrassing data network outage in South Africa, I see an MTN ad right underneath.
Well played.
I promise you, it's true as day.
Oh my word! You're
literally
well played.
Underneath it.
You're
so apparently, Vodacom has dismissed speculation that poor network design and configuration resulted in many subscribers being unable to access locally hosted websites on Thursday. However, it has not provided a sound explanation for why its data network was offline for many subscribers while the networks of its South African rivals remain uninterrupted. So this comes after Vodacom subscribers around South Africa could not access the internet for several hours following a suspected submarine landslide that knocked out four undersea cables.
Oh, for your own sakes.
If it makes you feel any better, we're actually going to be talking about the ship that's on its way to fix that and where it is right now.
Okay, so after the music, you're going to give us an update on that?
After the music, absolutely.
Okay.
And before we jump off, now, one thing we have to note is when Vodacom went down, the reason that it went down is like four of these cables just got knocked. Mm. And they were and what's happening there is those cables are responsible for handling certain bandwidths of data. It's not like it's just like a river. A river, you can just throw water in and it's going to flow with the river. But when you're someone like Vodacom and you're managing many connected subscribers, some of them are going to go down this river, some of them are going to go down that river. And when one of those rivers block up, the rest of the water has to go through one of the other rivers. So what actually might have felt like a complete disconnect might have actually just been too many people trying to go through one place.
Yeah.
And that caused significant bottlenecks.
It's like a bit of a bottleneck.
Latency.
Yeah.
At least that's what Vodacom wants you to think. So that's their kind of...
It makes sense.
This is them saying this is what happened. I see
good
truth
story.
In it.
Yeah.
But if it is a situation where their network isn't configured properly to handle disruptions like that, it should be something for us as a consumer to be concerned about. But when it's something like this happens, they're going to fix it. Come on. You're not just going to sit around and you know, you don't want to be known as the one internet company that went down. Vodacom is known as having the best... You can't have the guy known as having the best coverage be the only one to go down.
Yeah.
You can't work like
that.
Yeah,
it's not going to work with the reputation. But Vodacom was also in the news this week for job layoffs, about 80 people.
Oh, really?
In various departments. They're trimming a bit. So I wonder if they're not saving up money to pay that Please Call Me guy.
They're going to need to start saving more.
You see, so 80 people, well, that's very sad. 80 people, you know, will get notifications that they're losing their jobs. You know, hopefully they'll get a nice package. But in this day and age here in South Africa, you know, losing your job, it's horrendous.
You want to hear something crazy? Those 80 people only represent 1% of Vodacom's total workforce.
Okay.
Just over 1%.
Wow, that's like a...
1.2%.
That's a very small percentage then, but still, it's 80 people, you know.
I think
a lot of people.
You know, I definitely think as people, when we're seeing these bigger companies, we can't lose sight of... We can't get lost in the numbers. If we hear that a company has 8,000 employees, or in this case, Vodacom has 7,554 employees, and it lets 80 of them go, that's still 80 people with 80 families.
Exactly.
It makes no difference, you know, to the totality of what's happening for those individuals.
But somebody at Vodacom, one of the executives said, or it was an analyst, I'm not sure, in a news article also said that if they pay that Please Call Me guy, it's going to have a devastating effect on the business. All that millions all of a sudden gone, you know, it's going to leave a big dent.
You know what I think about that, and I agree. I think, one, that substantial cost, unplanned, unprecedented, you know, you can't even predict it, is going to hurt you. But what is a reality, I think, is that not only did they use this man's technology, but they also made money off this man's technology. He then... Only after a few years and a lot of money made did he go and actually sue them. And instead of stopping making money, they continue to make money. Business as usual. And doing that, the amount of time they spent still making money even after the lawsuit started is bigger than the amount of time they made money before it started.
Yeah.
So that 20 billion, 15 billion is negligence. Like, you didn't stop.
Right.
You didn't make a plan. You didn't come to an agreement, and now that agreement has tumbled out of control, and you sit here having to basically pay all of what you had to pay at once, and that's going to hurt you, and you're not going to you're not just recovering from that. It's not a bump in the road. That's a catastrophic setback.
Any company will have a huge dent with that.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how big you
are. I'd be more surprised if they survive that, because that's...
I'm sure they will. But I'm also wondering, you know, can you still send the Please Call Me now in 2024?
We should
try. Operational? I mean, who still sends please call me? Remember when your mom said, if you're done after school, just send me please call me, I'll come pick you up.
Yeah.
Remember that kind of stuff. Or, you know.
I think it still works because, I mean, just like about a year ago, I got some please call me's as well.
Jeez, I've never received one in ages.
It has so many ads attached to it.
Yeah, and that's how they make the money, you see. People are wondering how they're making money out of please call me's. That's how they make the money. Yeah. It's basically an advertising space. It's like a little billboard, yeah. Right, let's go for some music, and then Kane's going to tell us what's happening with that darn cable at the bottom of the ocean.
Let's do it.
And we're back with Tech Plus. Kane is going to tell us about that undersea cable. Kane, I thought it was fixed because last week the picture was very different. I mean, then we could actually see that there was something wrong, you know, accessing some sites, doing some downloads internationally. And a lot of people were having trouble. I mean, it was even a radio station that went down because of it, like completely for a whole day. But now that cable was still broken, right?
Yeah. And you know what? It's not surprising because let's consider the gravity of the situation. If we look where that cable break happened, I mean, it's basically off of, I'd say it's like a little bit above Cape Town. Mm. If you go, you know, it's actually quite a ways above Cape Town, and it's quite remote. You know, it's a lot of kilometers away from the land. It's extremely deep.
Yeah.
The you're talking about open water, so it's not like the most best conditions at all times. You have to be awake about what's going on. And you have to not only get to this remote location, but you have to remain in this remote location, go down possibly 1,000, maybe more meters. In fact, the ship that goes to do these repairs is capable of repairing cables up to 7 kilometers deep.
I was going to say, you know, please don't send one of those Titan submarines, please.
You know, when you dive into a pool, you know, and you go to the bottom of the pool, that maximum is usually about 2 meters deep.
But is this like a proper thing going down? Is it also a submarine?
So they're about 3,000... They can go up to 3,500 times deeper than your average pool.
But is it a submarine?
No, it's a ship. And it has remote vehicles that underwater? Can go down.
Oh, okay.
So it has remote vehicles, and those vehicles are capable of repairing cables. They're capable of... But remember, this cable has obviously been severed, so they have to find the one side, they have to find the other side, they have to join it together.
How did they even get there?
Now,
in the first place,
here's also something crazy, right? What is fiber? Fiber is glass. What type of glass?
It's quite amazing to see it, eh?
So
in real life.
When you blast broke a glass, how easy was it to put back together? You know, when was the last time you broke something that was glass and put it back together? Specialized equipment is required to connect these cables together. So not only do they have to man the vehicle, but they have to get down there, they have to see what's going on, they have to actually establish what happened, because they don't know. It's assumption. They're assuming it's a submarine landslide because it's so far out and it's so far away and it's so far out of a particular territory that they don't suspect foul play. But they can't be sure. It's an assumption.
Yeah, because they said it's too far out to be human activity or even a ship anchor.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Orange's Marine Leon Thevenin ship has departed South Africa and is on the way to the area where 4 undersea cables broke last week, causing widespread internet outages and slowdowns. The ship was loaded up with fiber optic cable in Cape Town Harbor before setting off to the coastal waters of Abidjan. And according to the vessel tracking website, where you can go on Google, you can type in marine traffic, one word.
Oh, hold on.
You can actually go to the website,
mm-hmm.
and you'll be able to see the Leon Levenin
where it is.
And where it is. And where it currently is, if you go to it now, you'll see that it's exactly off the coast of Namibia, because it's adjacent to Cape Town, but in the middle of Namibia, basically. So you're on the left-hand side of South Africa and in the middle of Namibia, basically. You've got to travel up the coast. And you can see the ship right there right now. I'll even show you.
What's called marine traffic?
I'll send you the link now.
Oh.
You have to go to a specific part of the website, because obviously it's a specific ship. But the ship is called Leon Thevenin, like L-E-O-N space T-H-E-V-E-N-I-N. That's the name of that ship. And its IMO number is 8108676. And you can go have a look at this and basically see where its route is. It arrived on Friday at 6 a.m. at the location, and it's been working on it ever since.
Okay, so it is actually there now. Okay.
And it's just crazy to me that you can see this ship. You know, people are underwater right now, connecting cables under the ocean.
Ooh, you know, that must be very deep, eh?
Wow.
But who put those cables there initially?
Man.
How did they... I mean, how do you... Where do you even begin with a task like that?
You know what I think? Huh? I'm no expert, but what I would assume is I think they have channels, or at least parcels of this cable. Like, you have... Maybe the cable is 1,500 kilometers long, but it's broken up into like 60 or 70 different connection ports, or maybe something like that, as opposed to like a single cable running under the water. And these things have to be protected under the water. There's currents, there's... And can you just imagine for a second that, like, there's this cable underwater, an anchor hits it. Now, the actual housing for the cable breaks, leaving the cable, and that cable now gets pulled by an anchor under the water. So wherever it's connected to is just going to have this huge shearing tension on the cable, and then that cable is going to snap. And who knows how far up the conduit that cable is going to ricochet. I don't even know how these cables behave. Maybe it's stretched out. How do they know where the break starts and where it... Just like, I have more questions about how these guys do their job. And there's this, and this vehicle is so specialized for this job that I just feel like, are these guys installing and fixing broken cables all the time? Like, how unaware of this maintenance are we? How much maintenance does it require to keep continents connected via a little glass cable?
And, I mean, a ship, a captain just throwing an anchor there, and then when he says, ship ahoy, you know, there goes the whole bloody Africa, and the thousands of lives changed forever. It could be life-threatening, you know.
South Africans go from watching Netflix to Netflix.
But listen, you know, very old-fashioned way of you know, connecting people still in 2024. I was asking the question again this week, you know, why is it not via satellite? Why do we have cables down in the sea that a shark can trip on and then it goes down? You know? Ow, like, stuck my toe.
Just gonna brush past that whole shark tripping. Can you imagine that shark's just swimming and it just bails over? It's like completely
what
wipes
is this
out.
Thing, yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, but still, I mean, shouldn't it all be satellite?
I think it should.
Or is it bandwidth related? Is it not possible to have that kind of bandwidth via satellite? I don't know.
Well, I think Elon Musk has launched like 3,000 satellites into orbit or something like that, and he still doesn't have global coverage.
Okay.
So I think maybe it requires a lot.
Maybe it's not possible then. There must be a reason. I just want to know, how did they start?
I think it is possible, but I think only, you know, in the words of Elon Musk, some things we assume are being worked on all the time. Mm. But if no one's there actually trying to do it, it's probably not getting done. And we don't know of many heavy armed satellite internet companies as much as Starlink. I mean, Neuralink just had its first successful trial, human trial. A guy who was paralyzed from the waist down, from the neck down, is able to use a mouse on a computer with his brain.
Just thinking about it.
Not thinking, like, he controls the mouse with his brain. He said the first time they let him use the device without anybody supervising him, so the first time he was allowed to use the device unsupervised, he played like 8 hours of Sid Meier's Civilization on the computer.
Wow.
Because he would just not have been able to do it before. So he's basically interacting with the computer through his brain, and he's moving the mouse around. As long as he can see the mouse, he can perform clicks, he can move the mouse around.
Is that what Stephen Hawking was doing?
I think in a bit. Stephen Hawking had like a way of typing on a keyboard almost. I think he was able to...
I think with his eyes typing.
Yeah.
And then, but I mean, they could have given him a better voice, eh?
Yeah.
Because you can select, I'm sure you can select any voice, you know. It's like, he sounds
he's
like...
He's in heaven right now, so upset about ChatGPT and this whole like really good human voice synthesizer.
Yeah, because he sounded like a robot. He sounded like that thing that made that song Satisfaction, Benny Benassi.
You got people sounding normal now, and then his M's are sounding like...
Push me, I'm just a shot.
Man,
you know that song? Satisfaction. But listen, going quickly, somebody said also this week, you know, the conspiracy theories going around about so many things, and one of them was that the internet cable tore because of Africa shifting. Africa is busy shifting and ripping apart or splitting in half or something. What do you say to that?
I think that happens far too slow. I think.
Okay, yeah, it's gonna I don't know. If it is happening. Because like there's a fault line, apparently. Yeah, there's a fault line, apparently. And ironically enough, our only nuclear station that we have here in South Africa is sitting on that fault line. Trust South Africa to build a nuclear power station on a fault line.
On the one we have. Just the one fault line we have in the whole country. It's basically one The whole of South Africa is just basically one big tectonic plate.
But listen, and talking about conspiracy theories, this week, oh man, I just saw so many conspiracy theories again about Kate. Kate Middleton. I mean, there was this woman walking with who looks like Prince William, but then they zoom in and you're like, no, man, that's not Kate. It doesn't look like her. It looks like a younger girl. There's a resemblance, absolutely. But when you zoom in, it's like, no. So this is just adding, I mean, this is just making it worse. Hey?
I feel like they're digging, if it is fake and they are making a plan, they're really digging this hole pretty deep as opposed to just if they had said nothing. Like, look at Apple is the perfect example of someone that just says nothing. Let me give you an example. The iPhone 15 comes out. The worst phone to be released from Apple, quite arguably, in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Easily.
Lots of problems.
Apple didn't make one statement about it. How many people are still complaining about the iPhone 15?
No one.
No one. Yeah. The phone hasn't changed.
So just...
Apple just refused to acknowledge anything was wrong.
Yeah.
And they're better off, which is crazy to me. Like, absolutely withholding any kind of communication at all, any acknowledgement, nothing. No receipt of this problem. It just disappears. Humans just move on. And that's pretty crazy to me, because I would be pretty upset if I bought a new phone and it's just the worst experience every day.
Overheating and all that kind of stuff.
So Telkom has actually sold its towers, its internet network towers, for 6.75 billion rand.
Mm.
Yeah, so there you go, investing in cell phone towers.
Who bought Vodacom?
No, actually a company by the name of Actix and a consortium with TowerCo Bidco Proprietary Limited.
So what are they going to do with it?
And Royal, I think they're going to substitute. I think a lot of the ISPs in South Africa piggyback off the same network. So I think they're just taking over the revenue earning potential of that network, while Telkom has got a flat rate for it. They've just liquidated that stored value into something that they can spend cash, liquid cash. And the other one, I think, takes over whatever ownership Telkom had over it.
Listen, so you're talking about Telkom. My mom asked me a question this week. She said, Ion, does Telkom still exist? I said to her, yes, but I think their main revenue is now from, like, cell phones, right?
Yes.
Not the old landlines anymore. Because even if you ask for a landline now, or you want, like, some kind of home phone, many of the old people, they're used to it. You get like a little portable one now that works with VoIP, voice over IP. You don't get your traditional landline that's plugged into the wall and all that kind of stuff. Because number one, those cables have been stolen in the cities. And number two, they corroded and they're just not putting in any new lines. So I think a lot of people lost their jobs there, you know, those Telkom installers. But Telkom does exist. It's just more of they're focusing on the mobile division now and the internet side more.
I think Telkom very much focuses only on that. Whereas that's their subsidiary, OpenServe, is now the new...
the internet thing.
ADSL-like Telkom company.
Okay, but you can't really get ADSL anymore, can you?
You can't get ADSL, and you can't get fiber through OpenServe alone. Okay. OpenServe is like a infrastructure, and NICE...
then you need an ISP.
And all these other guys actually operate within that infrastructure.
Okay, so Telkom, well explained. I now understand.
So Telkom didn't actually stop providing internet services. What they actually did is they portioned a piece of their company, or split their company into basically an infrastructure provider, and then their telecom company actually uses that infrastructure in the same way that someone like Nasdaq might use that infrastructure. So they've become an internet infrastructure company in so far as creating OpenServe, which I thought was very interesting. Another thing that's very interesting for those of us who love space, we're talking about Starlink satellites and things like that. NASA's tiny burst cube satellite is en route to the International Space Station. Burst Cube is aboard a SpaceX Dragon resupply spacecraft, which launched on the Falcon 9 rocket from Cape Canaveral on Thursday. After it arrived and is unpacked, the shoebox-sized CubeSat will be released into orbit, where it will locate and study gamma ray bursts linked to the gravitational waves that were first detected in 2016. Very, very cool. Some NASA stuff going on. You know what? I don't know. Apparently NASA owns a portion of the pyramid, like the Great Pyramid, funny enough. And wow. Also some of the Grand Canyon.
Yo, okay, that's interesting.
Something I didn't know. Apparently there's a piece of the Grand Canyon that you can't go, that if you go there, there's like armed forces and stuff that won't let you go there, and that's because it's owned by NASA.
What's inside?
Great question. Why do you have a piece of the pyramid either as well? You know? What's your business there? So state your business here. What do you need with this? Why are you doing it? You know, I wish I knew.
But Kane.
Yes.
We spoke about iPhone just now.
Yes.
Can you tell me why Apple is in trouble this week?
Ooh, this is a thick plot.
Because that was quite of a landmark case for them this week.
So the US, now we've heard about this before. We heard about, I think it was Epic Games. They sued Apple. We saw Spotify sue Apple. And now we see the US suing Apple. And they're all suing them for the same thing, for a potential monopolistic-like approach to the App Store and to smartphones in general. So the Department of Justice claims Apple has maintained an illegal monopoly over the smartphone market by locking in customers and making experiences worse for rival products.
True. So
that's what we're getting blamed for. And let's be honest, we've heard our fair share of angry, upset, and frustrated companies trying to play ball with Apple. And some of the things that they've done in the past is like, hey, Apple, you know, we as Spotify don't want to have to pay you 30%. Oh, yeah. Of our revenue because someone subscribed to Spotify through your app store. Now, although Spotify wouldn't be there without the app store, how do you expect Spotify to appropriately provide remuneration to their artists if 30% of that revenue needs to go just to the app store? So let's say Spotify wants to take 10%. That only leaves 40-50%, depending on what other expenses they layer onto the artist, for the artist to potentially earn. Maybe not such a bad thing. People can say, well, you know, as an artist earning 50%, not that bad. I think it's that bad when Apple is earning 30% of that. Someone who has zero involvement in your music, someone who has zero involvement with your label, but simply provides a medium for people to listen to the music. I think that's worth a 5-10% commission. Yeah,
but isn't
every artist's earnings in the world through Spotify?
And but what about iTunes? Isn't iTunes competition to Spotify?
How does Spotify compete with iTunes, for example?
Because iTunes, you got to pay for the tunes. As Spotify, you've got a free plan.
Spotify has to pay to be on Android's iOS, on App Store, and on Apple's App Store. So if Apple has an unfair monopoly, they can essentially make more money from iTunes. They can pay more money to creators from iTunes because they can, they could go so far as to take that 30% that is from other companies trying to have music apps on the App Store and pay that directly to the artists from iTunes. So it is a monopoly. It creates a very unfair landscape for people to operate in who are all supposed to be treated equally in this, you know, consumer style.
I think they're also business. Accusing them of making it difficult, you know, unnecessarily for the consumer to change. Because I've noticed this, do you know how difficult it is to move someone's stuff from an iPhone to an Android?
It's almost impossible.
It's almost impossible because, I mean, and the iPhone is all linked to the iCloud and all that kind of stuff, and you can't just move that stuff via cable or cloud or whatever to an Android phone.
No,
they make it really difficult. I mean, you need to go and buy cables and stuff. Then I think you got to put it on your laptop first.
Yeah.
And then from your laptop to your Android phone. But they really make it so difficult that you don't want to move to Android. So this is not coincidence. No. This is done on purpose, right?
So the DOJ, the Department of Justice, along with 16 state and district attorney generals, accuses Apple of driving up prices for consumers and developers at the expense of making users more reliant on its phones. Basically exactly what you said. The parties allege that Apple selectively imposes contractual restrictions on developers and withholds critical ways of accessing the phone as a way to prevent competition from arising, according to the release. So there you go, Apple. You can eat both ends of the pie, but you can't do it forever. Yeah.
You can eat your apple. But, yeah, that's not cool, eh? They make it so difficult to move. And in the end, you, like, give up. And you're like, oh, I'll stay with Apple.
But you know what's
funny? That's what they
want. Spotify and Deezer, which are both music apps, have both publicly applauded Apple for applauded the Apple antitrust suit that the US
good,
is doing.
Good, good,
good. Odyssey isn't selling Cadence 13 after all, so that's another music app as well. So here we have another bit of news. BMW's Vision Neon Class X has a round battery cell for a super brain, microprocessor computers, and a 3D grill. This is one of BMW's new and very exciting car concepts, which is about to come out. So BMW announced this new car concept, the Vision New Class X, but it's spelled very interestingly. It's spelled Vision like you would spell Vision, but New is spelled N-E-U-E, and Class is spelled K-L-A-S-S-E-X. So it's the BMW Vision New Class X, but you would, if you read it like it's spelt, it would be Vision Nui Classy X. That the BMW automaker says will inform the direction of its future lineup of electric vehicles. So really talking about it as a flagship, BMW's distinct kidney-shaped grille and a bunch of innovative features, especially around its battery and electric architecture, that suggests there's a lot of exciting stuff coming out in BMW's future. One of the things that are very cool is obviously this super brain that they talk about, which is using microprocessing units to do more maths, more fast, make your drive more better, in a simple way. So take a look at that. That's going to be very, very interesting. Really a flagship of what some of the technological, you know, main attractions for this year might be in some of the newer BMW cars. Then we have Apex Legends. It's a game. It's online. It's a very competitive esports game. Was recently a victim to a hack. But the hack that happened here is crazy. You've never heard of a hack like this before. In gamer history, this has never happened before. So what happened for this particular hack was that Apex Legends was having their esports tournament. And it was cutthroat. You know, it's a big tournament. Lots of, you know, adrenaline, high stakes, big cash prize. Finals happening, you know, millions of dollars on the line, and in the middle of this game, all of a sudden, a couple of the players' PCs suddenly start showing hacking software.
Yo.
Right? So there's this hacking software popping up. There's one of the guys, while he's playing, there's text happening in the game chat. So while he, and everybody's being filmed, so you can see that he's playing the game, he's not typing, but while he's playing the game, a hacking screen is coming up. The game is being like he's sending messages into the game saying, hey, you know, this is I'm this hacker, this is what I'm doing.
Oh wow.
And what is thought to have happened is they believe that a hacker group or hacker has infiltrated the anti-hacking software and has been able to load hacks onto people's computers remotely.
Wow.
And he used a main stage kind of event where the world of gamers was watching this game. And all of a sudden, he, from his computer, who knows where, loaded hacks onto this person's computer and actually ran the hacks. Did stuff to his computer, suggesting that if it is a compromise of the anti-hacking software called Easy Anti-Cheat, if it is a vulnerability there, people have suggested not playing any games at the moment that use Easy Anti-Cheat. Which sure. is a problem, because there's only about 300 games out there that use it, from the finals to... There are just actually a whole bunch of games that use this anti-hacking software. And the irony in that the anti-hacking software is the vulnerability that was used to load hacking software on in a main stage event.
That's next level, eh?
Is crazy.
I must actually applaud this hacker, because that's a very deep job.
The cojones on this dude.
Yeah, I know. Huge.
He didn't want to like be a casual little hacker, did something, made some money. No, he wanted main stage, main character, attention, yep. And oh, did he get it. And we don't know who he is. It's obviously he's using it, or they, or she, is using a pseudonym for this particular hacker organization. But if you're Apex, and you have a game and you're doing a tournament and someone has done that and you're stressing right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're like advocating a massive vulnerability. It's so dangerous, in fact, that if you were playing one of these games and they did have access to your computer remotely through the anti-hacking software, they could track your keystrokes.
Whoops.
They could figure out usernames, passwords, bank account
not
details.
Good. Not good.
They could maybe even see what's on your desktop, your folder hierarchy.
Ish.
It could basically just completely remote control your computer.
Now I'm glad I'm not a gamer.
Ah, yeah. Not the best thing to happen in gaming history. So, moral of the story, guys, until we hear more, just if you are a gamer out there and you do see the easy anti-cheat pop-up happening, just proceed with caution.
Just ask yourself,
is it really worth playing this game right now? And if it is, maybe just like load into a new user on your computer or something like that's not that dangerous. For you, if someone were to get access to it, and obviously if you have stuff on your computer that is very sensitive, just rather not play it for now. Give it a week or two for everything to kind of iron itself out. Next up, we're taking a look at Microsoft that are launching their first AI PCs.
But
yep,
and music.
They're going to be the Surface Pro 10 and Surface Laptop 6 for businesses. So those are the first devices you'll see with Google AI on. I don't know what to expect. I'm very, very eager to find out how they're trying to improve the user experience through AI. I mean, I can imagine things that'll take notes for you, that'll check if you've put up calendar events, say, be able to send you emails. I don't know how far the list is, but I think we're not far away from it. So worth keeping an eye on that and you know, making sure that we know what's going on. Apparently, WhatsApp has an update as well. You can now pin more than one message in a group chat. I don't know if you could do that. At one time, you couldn't even pin any message in a group chat.
I can pin in individual chats.
Yeah, now you can pin multiple messages in a chat.
Nice.
Which is actually super useful because
one is
not always enough, especially for a community chat.
Wow.
And that's and now we go to a music break.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. It's the final stretch for this week. Caden, what have you got for us next?
Okay, here's something very interesting. Remember last week or the week before we spoke about Reddit, and we said that Reddit was actually going public. They were going to do an IPO, an initial public offering where people are able to buy their stocks, but they were giving stock options to their highest super users. So if you were a Reddit super user, meaning you use Reddit every day for the last 5 years or whatever, I don't know what the exact metrics were, but you had an option to buy the stock. And funny enough, Reddit shares jumped as much as 70% in their NYSE debut before dropping back. So RDDT, or Reddit stock, is officially open for trading. According to CNBC, Reddit and selling shareholders raised about $750 million from the IPO. With its current share price of $48, the 19-year-old website now has a market cap of $7.6 billion as it pursues business growth via advertising, monetizing commerce on the platform, and licensing data. So not every day you see a stock go onto the marketplace and hit 70% gains. That's like cryptocurrency things. That's what you hear about Bitcoin and, you know, and cryptocurrencies making those kind of gains. So it shows you how powerful Reddit is. It shows you the power of a community. Never underestimate the power of a community consensus of value.
Yeah.
Look at the community cryptocurrencies. Dogecoin and Shiba Inu, Pepe, Floki.
What?
These are all different cryptocurrencies that are basically a joke. They're called meme coins and they have a value. And the value is simply because of the strength of the community. If enough people will believe something is valuable, it becomes valuable.
True.
And I often think about, and it's a bit of a tangent, but think about this. If you're in crypto, think about this. We have a thing called a stable coin in cryptocurrency, which is essentially a peg to some sort of US dollar value. So if you were thinking, what is a stable coin in crypto land? Well, if you have Bitcoin, which is a currency, and Ethereum, which is a currency, you know, Bitcoin's worth $70,000 a coin. Ethereum's worth $4,000 a coin. Litecoin's worth $80 a coin. You have all these different prices. So if you've got a bunch of Bitcoin or a bunch of Ethereum or a bunch of Litecoin and you want to sell it because the market is good enough and you're going to get your profits out of it, what would be the point in selling it into something else that could potentially go down? Like if you have a bunch of cryptocurrencies and you sell all of them for Bitcoin, and now you have a bunch of Bitcoin, but Bitcoin tanks and goes down 50%, what's the point in putting it in Bitcoin? Mm-hmm. So one thing that a lot of people do is they try and put it in what's a stable option. So you might look for the most stable currency, but most stable currencies are Euro, USD, you know, AUD, CAD. These are your stable currencies. Euro, pound, all stable currencies. So what they did is they invented a coin in CryptoLand that is tethered to the price of a dollar. So that's called a stable coin. So USDC is a stable coin. No matter where it's traded on the market, it has a value of $1.
Hmm.
And you have another one, USDT. It's called Tether. It also is a stable coin. Luna, Terra Luna, from Du Quan was another stable coin, but that lost its value. And that's what happened when that happens, we say the coin depegged. So it was no longer stable. Hmm. And the very interesting thing about a stable coin is people in crypto believe it's worth a dollar.
Yeah.
There's no one in crypto that you can just pull off the side of the street and say, hey, dude, when was the last time you checked to make sure that USDC's books were legit? Meaning the amount of cryptocurrency in circulation and the amount of USD that they have in their bank account are balanced. No one does that. But the reason it stays at a dollar is because people believe it's worth a dollar.
Mm.
You're not going to sell something that is advertised to you as worth a dollar for half a dollar or a dollar and a half if it's advertised to you as something that's always equal a dollar. So when we saw the massive crypto dump, the sell-off, the 20% loss, and everybody selling into stable coins, why does the stable coins price not go through the roof?
Mm.
When everybody's selling their stable coins to go back into crypto because the time is good, why does the stable coins price not sink to the ground? And that's because of the consensus of value. People just have a consensus that this is equal to a dollar. And my argument is it equal to a dollar because people have said it's equal to a dollar? Or is it equal to a dollar because in crypto we need something that is equal to a dollar? And that need for something to be equal to a dollar is enough of a necessity that enough people can believe it's worth, regardless of fact-checking it. No one is fact-checking that this is legit, but they believe it is. The power of value at a consensus level. So when you look at something like Reddit, and it can pump a price 70%, it's because there are so many Reddit users who have a consensus of value. You should never undermine a lot of people believing in the value of one thing. And that's a good way to end the show.
Yeah, wow. I was just listening because you lost me there, but with all those terms, you know, all these coins and crypto and stuff, but you're like a crypto king, so I just listen when you speak. I can't even comment on it. I don't even know what a Bitcoin is worth right now.
It's worth a bit too much. Oh, before we end, actually, here's a funny note. Samsung, if you go and buy one of their brand new anti-glare OLED TVs, they might throw in a free TV.
Okay.
It's not every day that you buy a TV and get a free TV.
Buy one and get one free.
Yeah. I mean, a 65-inch TV, it's the TU690T. It's not going to blow anyone away, but a free TV is a free TV.
Yeah.
Especially I'm already buying a TV. A TV is a lot of money.
It is. And I get a free one.
10 grand for free.
Even if it's not a great one, you know, just like a second one for another bedroom or whatever.
Yes. So that's pretty cool.
That's very cool. That's Samsung, eh?
Samsung, yes.
Okay. Well, great. On that note, Kane, thank you so much. Have a wonderful weekend. And we'll see you again in a week's time.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you all of our listeners for listening in. We'll see you same time, same place next week.
Absolutely. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.